1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. We welcome you to another edition of Feldis and Kale. Great to have you along with us. We are proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And Dan, hope you had a great holiday weekend, gloomy as it was outside.
It was wonderful, other than the rain and the cold, but it was a nice weekend. And took a pause to, like everybody else, to remember the service and sacrifice of people who served our country and died fighting for our freedoms.
Absolutely so. That is what certainly the weekend and Memorial Day itself is all about. And our guest today is the Chief Executive Officer of the Boys and Girls Clubs of Central New Hampshire. That would be Chris Emond. And Chris joined the Boys and Girls Club in 2000 when it was simply the Concord Boys and Girls Club. Chris has earned a Champion for Mental Health Award from Riverbend Community Mental Health Services and a Blue Door Award from Boys and Girls Clubs of America for Outstanding Director in the Northeast Region, and a Concord Chamber of Commerce Pinnacle Award for Business Leader of the Year. Did I miss anything, Chris?
I don't think so, Ken.
Chris Emond is here, and we talk about the fact that you joined the Boys and Girls Club in 2000, 21 years ago now. You haven't aged a bit, I know that. But there's certainly been a lot of growth in the Boys and Girls Clubs of Central New Hampshire, which didn't even exist until a number of years ago.
Yeah, no, it's been a good run, and the need just kind of continued to grow. So the organization grew along with it as we went into additional towns. And that growth continues today. I mean, we continue to get phone calls from different areas. Hill, New Hampshire is probably the most recent example. So it, I'd say it's plug and play at this point, but it's relatively easy for us to put up a new site. I shouldn't say easy in that you need staffing to do it, and all businesses are struggling with that right now. But as long as the community wants us there, it's pretty straightforward.
And you started with the one location at 55 Bradley Street in Concord, which is still thriving. And how many satellite clubs do you have now?
We have 24.
Wow.
And 19 of them are actually running right now. The other five are in schools that, we'll start up again next school year. But for this year, we kind of took a hiatus.
But 19 are active currently.
That's correct. Yep. It's been nice. The school districts have been great in letting us back in. And, everybody kind of forgets so quickly that even at the beginning of last school year, there were some questions on how safe it would be to have outsiders in and that kind of thing. So so kudos to most of the school districts in saying, no, the phone was ringing in the middle of last summer saying, we hope you'll be back. You guys are the Boys and Girls Club are going to be one of the few organizations that we're going to be able to partner with this year to provide services to the kids.
Chris, you and your staff and volunteers just do amazing work. Thank you for all that you do and all those awards, much deserved and then some. Miss seeing you around. Obviously, last year's been a challenging year, and it's been probably incredibly challenging for the population you serve. Can you talk about some of that and how you adjusted and continue to serve the community?
Sure. I mean, early on, it was really just for emergency workers and so on and so forth. The biggest challenge for the last year really has not, it's been the kind of our lack of being able to interact with some of the kids that need us the most. Parents who had to go to work were kind of like those frontline people, as you kept hearing about. Those are people that, obviously we saw all year, but there are quite a few of the kids where maybe, for whatever reason, it wasn't like they're tech workers and they were able to work from home. There might have been some other issues going on or some economic issues going on. Kind of your classic Boys and Girls Club family. that really was shut off from our services from the bulk of the year just because of, you know, lack of transportation. Right. The kids weren't in school. And that was worrisome to us because people would ask me, they're like, do you have any idea what's going on with those families? And I said, honestly, no. And we have zero contact. You know, we might be able to email or do some things, but it was not, clearly not the same as being able to see them in person. And I'm looking forward, you know, as we've gotten back into the schools, we've been able to see many of those students again. But next year, I'm really looking forward to being able to see those kids again and make sure that they're hooked up with the services that they need.
And certainly, Chris, with the American Rescue Plan, a lot of money flowing into the state, including child care. There's $77 million allocated to New Hampshire, and guidance from the Biden administration just came out a few weeks ago. Do you have a sense of how that money is reaching the providers on the ground like you? Is it working? What's not working? Has it been communicated by the state how this is going to roll out?
Yep. Yes to all of those. So first of all, the funds that came out kind of during the pandemic, as we'll call it, were literally lifesavers. I don't think any child care center would be open right now. There might have been a couple small private ones, but the bulk of them would have had severe financial difficulties getting through the last year. So those federal funds that came through the state were just, there's no words really to describe it. The $77 million that you're referring to, that has been communicated by DHHS. They're still waiting for some final guidance from the feds. Now that, you know, quote unquote, the emergency period, you could say, has gone in the rearview mirror. Now we need to be, and I think the state, rightfully so, needs to be thoughtful on how they're going to use those funds, because it's not only, all right, we need to fill whatever remaining gaps there are. And what I mean by that is some people still are not fully enrolled. They're still struggling with staff.
Right.
But how do we set ourselves up as a state for the future in child care? Because I'm sure you're well aware that there's a massive work shortage, employee shortage everywhere. And that really impacts child care as well. And it's a problem that I don't have the solution to, because if it was that simple, I think we wouldn't have this situation. But it's something we're all going to have to kind of work together for the immediate relief, but also to look to the future and how are we going to build tomorrow's workforce for child care.
Well, certainly no easy solution, no silver bullet, but as my dad would say, maybe there's silver buckshot. And if you had some proposals, Chris, about how to deal with it, and maybe some that you've communicated with the state, you're on the ground, you're an expert, you're a provider. What are some of the ideas about how to put that money to work to build for the future in child care?
Well, one that the state is contemplating is working with some of the larger organizations to take on the administrative burden for some of the smaller ones, calling them administrative hubs or what have you. Essentially, that's what the Boys and Girls Club of Central New Hampshire has become for the 24 satellite kind of service sites that we have. We take care of all the boring background stuff like HR and payroll so that we can pour the resources that each one of those sites generates into the programming staff itself. So you can pay those people more, and because paying people a livable wage, which we've been talking about for a while, you have no choice now. You know, the labor market is so tight, the market is basically dictating what people are to be paid. And, you know, and rightfully so. Anybody that's a teacher, an educator, in child care, I mean, that's a tough job. You are on the floor 8 hours a day, and, you know, you get a couple minutes break here and there. So paying these folks a livable wage, but something where they want to make this their career, we as a field, along with government as a whole, are going to have to figure out the solution to that pretty quickly. Or again, you're gonna see some places close for lack of staff. And you know what's going to happen then. I mean, prices are just going to go up, and you're going to be pricing some of these families out.
Our guest on Feldes and Kale today is Chris Emond, and Chris is the Chief Executive Officer of the Boys and Girls Clubs of Central New Hampshire, 24 in total, 19 operating right now. We'll talk more with Chris after we take a break. Feldes and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. 1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Feldes and Kale, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Our guest today is the CEO of the Boys and Girls Clubs of Central New Hampshire, Chris Emond. And Chris, you know, Dan and I are pretty much familiar with what you do at your 24 locations around the central part of the state. But I think some people may be surprised to learn that how diverse the Boys and Girls Clubs have become in terms of the services that you provide. I think there, you know, there's still some people out there with the perception, you know, that, you know, kids after school go there to play ping pong and shoot baskets and whatever. But it's a lot more than that. It certainly has evolved over the years.
Oh, completely. Yeah. And, you know, that's always, I think, going to be our heart and soul, is making sure the kids have some fun activities to do when they're not in school. But, you know, as time has gone on, we've had to become a lot more. You know, the demands and the requirements of working with kids are so much greater than they used to be. So with new staff, you're always like, the kids have to have fun here, period.
Yep.
But along with that, you know, you want to be able to do extracurricular educational activities. You certainly want to make sure that these kids are safe, not just in a physical manner, but an emotional manner as well. We want the club to be an area where they can truly be themselves. And I know that sounds cliche, but you know, many people remember those middle school cafeteria days where you had to fake it. You had to kind of pretend you were somebody you were not. And I've heard a lot of our alumni say, "Now, for whatever reason at the club, I could kind of just be myself," and it was awesome. Making sure that we get them to some new opportunities and making sure that they want to take advantage of those new opportunities and to encourage them. We've all had coaches and teachers over the year that said, you know what, or, you know, Dan, you ought to run. You ought to run for office. I mean, somewhere along the line, somebody encouraged you to do that. You know, yep. You know what, I think I will. That is what we try to do on a daily basis here at the club and make sure that some of these kids who may not have that person in their corner has it in their corner. The biggest change we've made is we're now working with infants, toddlers, and preschoolers the past few years. That's definitely something I would guarantee most people out there probably are unaware of.
Right.
And that's pretty soon that's going to be 300 out of the 1,200 kids we work with every week are going to be early childhood kids. And when you think of childcare, that's kind of your classic childcare need. And
yeah,
right now,
yep.
When we talk about the staffing issue, that's really where many of us are struggling in childcare, and we've got a waiting list that's 120 kids long.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's we just got Chris and Ken, Aaron, and I. We have two younger daughters, Iris and Josie. We just got a notification from one of the places that we applied to several years ago.
Yeah,
then we finally got in.
Wow. All right.
But we're fortunate. We're really fortunate that we have an amazing a child care provider where both Iris and Josie are at. And Iris is turning 4 coming up here in August, and Josie will turn 3 in October. And we're fortunate. We're lucky. Not every parent is that lucky. And that's a major impact, not just for that family, Chris, but also our economy. Talk about the value of the access to affordable, high-quality child care, not just to those kids and their social and emotional development, but also to our economy.
Oh, it's critical, and I think we saw that when our governor shut down the state and public schools. I mean, I remember that day watching it on TV and then thinking, I wonder what's going to happen with childcare, and saying, well, nope, childcare is going to be open. And at first, I'll be honest, there's some people are like, that doesn't make any sense. Why would we continue to have childcare open? But then it was very clear, you know, after some quick thought, and it was obvious. It's like, no one's going to be able to work if you have no place for any of these kids to go. And that's where, like, yeah, you know, we've got to answer that call and continue to be open, because it would literally paralyze the state if you didn't have access to those kind of resources. So, you know, when you're talking about affordability, I mean, that's key, because we all sit down at our kitchen table at the end of the day and go, okay, if child care is X amount of dollars and I make X amount of dollars, you really got to consider whether it's even worth it for you to go to work, for one of you to go to work. You may have some people, it does make more sense than to stay home. And that's where that price point kind of ceiling comes in, because when people are like, well, why don't you just increase prices? It's like, Sure. But it doesn't work like every other business. You know, at some point in time, someone's going to pull themselves out of the workforce, and you're going to have one fewer viable employee out there, and not everybody can work from home. The affordability becomes really important when you're talking about frontline people, those grocery stores.
Right, right.
You know, they cannot work from home and couldn't throughout the entire time. And guess what? Those are the positions that people desperately need people. Restaurants, anybody in the tourism industry will tell you right now that they cannot find people. They're missing out on revenue right now in the rebound because they can't find staff. So it definitely is a community problem.
No doubt about it. I mean, the restaurant, the tourism industry, grocery store workers, folks that, in many cases, as you mentioned, Chris, were on the front lines of this crisis, needed access to affordable, high-quality child care throughout. And certainly there's a state budget conversation moving along. The governor has proposed a $15 million cut to the child care scholarship program, which helps working-class parents afford child care for their kids. The Senate has restored a couple million of that $15 million cut. Chris, I don't know if you weigh in on the state budget. If you don't want to, that's fine, obviously. But do you have any thoughts about that cut? And is there any conversation about some of the $77 million replacing that cut that Governor Sununu proposed?
Sure. We would certainly advocate for that. And, yeah, I mean, I'll talk about the budget. I mean, that is something I know the governor will probably revisit and think differently on. One of the things is we at the time that budget was being constructed, I'm not sure anybody really knew how many people were going to return back to the workforce. I think now we have a pretty clear picture that people's employers are like, okay, you're coming back, whether it's 2 or 3 days a week or 5 days a week. People are going back into the office. We get phone calls every single day from people saying, yeah, my boss just told me I got to go. What do you mean you don't have a spot? I'm on a waiting list. I mean, that's why we need to get the word out on both ends of it's going to be a funding issue with government, but it's also going to be something that we need to make clear with potential parents that don't wait till the last minute to think that there's a spot at these child care centers, because unfortunately there isn't. If you think you're going back in September, I would enroll your kid now and try and get on that waiting list. So hopefully by the time September rolls around, we'll have a spot for you.
No doubt about it. And apply for that child care scholarship program.
Scholarship, because just like anything else, if we're not utilizing it fully, then of course that's going to be an area that people might visit to look at reducing expenses. So I would use the word a little short-sighted. I think we need to kind of revisit that number, which I am confident that our legislature will do here in New Hampshire and go, yeah, no, we can't do that. Along with some of the discussions at the federal level, perhaps even expanding the eligibility for I think that's important.
You're talking about the American Families Plan, where you don't pay more than 7% of your income on child care.
Yeah, whether it's targeted, however you look at it, or just even expanding it to a next level where you're capturing, you know, being in this business for as long as I have, it's really that classic lower middle class, they're not eligible for anything.
If
we can just increase the eligibility requirements, just like you might see what they're trying to do with Medicare or Medicaid, that makes a lot of sense to me. You're not capturing everybody because there's people who can't afford to pay it, but you're increasing that that household income requirement so that they're not facing the cliff effect as soon as they would.
Yeah.
You know,
yep.
We all know the numbers. You don't have to make that much to suddenly be shut off from state scholarship.
Yeah. Yep.
Chris Eamon with us, and Chris, the CEO of the Boys and Girls Clubs of Central New Hampshire, and provides child care and youth care from, what's the youngest you have in there, Chris, the youngest child?
8 weeks old.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. It's amazing even for me to think about it sometimes, but yeah, we've got infants all the way up, they graduate and go to college, basically.
Yeah. So ideally, what does it take in terms of staffing numbers for your child and youth care programs?
Well, it depends on the age. Of course, the younger they are, the tighter the ratios. Infants, it's 1 to 4. And then you get to toddlers, it's 1 to 8, if I remember correctly. Licensing people might call me after and say, nope, that's not correct. That's not all my world. And then preschoolers, it's a little looser than that, but not by much. So you can tell, you can have a relatively small classroom. You might need 2 or 3 teachers in there.
Yeah.
And again, they need a break, and we're open more than 8 hours a day. So it, staffing's everything. And we're hiring in all areas, whether it's Laconia or here in Concord or down in Allenstown. I told our staff, essentially keep hiring people until I tell you to stop, because you can never have enough. And at least now, anyway, to get some of these folks off the waiting list, because it's not a building capacity issue; it's a staffing capacity issue.
Yeah, so there are definitely openings. How can people apply?
They can go right onto our website, and they can email me. Basically, I'll get them to the right person.
Okay, and your email is on the website.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep.
So get in touch.
Yeah, contact me or. Yeah, that's probably the easiest way, and then I will get them to the right center director.
And Chris, we've you know, hit the tip of the iceberg here on all the great services that you and your staff provide. We covered some of that, but let's talk a little bit about you. What do you like to do in your free time, Chris Eamon?
I do like to golf. I took it up a few years ago, and that's kind of been, it gets to be all consuming, let's put it that way. Sometimes I need to take a break from golf. But, and I'm kind of one of those health nut people, I guess. I never used to think of myself as that. But, you know, the older you get, the more you realize that taking care of yourself, and I tell my employees that all the time. I'm like, look, you gotta take care of you first. And then you can worry about taking care of all the other people here at the club or at home. And, that's definitely become a lot more important to me as I get older. You know, when you're younger, you don't think about that at all. You just get up and you feel great every day.
Right.
lucky 20 somethings, but as you know, you get over 40, then you realize, okay, yeah, you gotta start paying attention to that stuff. But, and I've got a family. I got 2 kids, one 16, just learning how to drive. My wife's taking them out there, and I got a daughter, 11. So there's a lot of softball games with her, so we're kind of in the thick of it with that, which is fun.
Well, of course, we're into June now, and summer just around the corner, so what is it going to look like for the Boys and Girls Clubs of Central New Hampshire in the summer of 2021?
It's going to look pretty normal, but honestly, we are still going to we'll use masks indoors, you know, for as long as that seems, you know, that makes sense. We're doing trips. They'll be somewhat limited, partially because some of the areas that we would normally go, that they just don't want a busload of kids coming in. And then the groupings that we do, if anybody's been to the Boys and Girls Club, we still have groups according to age, but we kind of let everybody usually mix in and kind of hang out with each other. We are still going to keep those groups separate, because as good as the numbers are in New Hampshire, when you're indoors, the kids still were not vaccinated, so we just want to make sure that we're being wise about that. And from a practical standpoint, if we have one positive case and you had 100 kids in one room, you're literally taking out those 100 kids, and those parents are not going to be able to go to work for 10 days. So that's obviously not what we want. So keeping those group sizes reasonable, and reasonable for us to be 25, you know, then you're minimizing the risk that way. But everything else, quite honestly, is going to be the same. Once they're playing outside, they can take the mask off, run around, have a good time like normal.
Well, that is certainly good to hear. And I know, you know, from talking with you and having some of the youngsters from the Boys and Girls Clubs on the air with us at various locations, that you do a lot of field trips and do a lot of great activities during the summer.
Yeah, we're going to have to be a little more creative where they're staying back a little bit more than they're used to. But our staff are good. You know, I saw some of the purchasing lists that they want. There's a bunch of, like, game, you know, it's old-fashioned games sometimes are not a bad thing. And reintroducing these games, the classics, as I kind of call them, that we all grew up with. Kids discover these things, and they think it's like the best thing ever. But putting the electronics down is the biggest thing for us, because they can do that at home. And I always tell parents, well, you're not paying us to have your kid, you know, hook up and play Xbox all day. They could do that in your basement, and they probably wouldn't even know you're gone. We don't want that. We want them to use their brain. We want them to learn, you know, the other thing, very basics about learning how to interact with each other, face to face, and actually talk to each other.
Yeah.
COVID has certainly not helped that situation, but even before that, everyone's staring at their phone.
And,
these people are not going to know how to carry on even a basic kind of conversation with each other in the workplace someday. But we've got to help them with that here and go, I know it stinks, but you got to put that phone down.
Put the phone down,
We've got to hang out with each other. And they will, you know, after a couple of complaints here and there,
they'll do it.
There's plenty to do here. So as I always kind of said, we can be, you can be the rich parent and kind of have all these extravagant kind of things going on. But at the club, getting back to those basic kind of things, is really the most effective, and I think always will be when you're working with children.
So they're discovering new games like kickball and dodgeball and that sort of thing?
Yeah, getting them back outside, and, you know, doing all of that, but even like Risk and Sorry and, you know, the board games.
Oh, yeah.
So the Lunar Day kind of board games, Jenga, that kind of stuff. And there's others that, you know, are maybe a little bit more educational that we'll throw in there. Just to mix it up a bit, but it's amazing at how many of these kids are like, I've never played this game before. This is great.
Yeah.
You know, we used to do this all the time back in the old days. So it's fun, and it's fun to watch them kind of light up when they're doing something that they thought they wouldn't like, quite honestly. So.
Do you have scholarships available for those summer camps?
Absolutely. We're never going to turn somebody away. So if a school or whatnot refers people to us, we'll certainly – there's discounts, or as you would call financial aid anyway, for as many people as we can. And those are essentially unlimited. But then there's like outright scholarships for cases where your classic case is when maybe grandma and grandpa suddenly find themselves in custody of children for whatever reason. And they're like, we still have to work. Where are these kids going to go all summer? And that's where we encourage you to call us. You know, we can help you in that situation, because usually they're not either eligible for state assistance yet, or they don't even know how to go about it. It was just, you know, a lot of these times it's things that they were not planning on. That's where I think the Boys and Girls Club can really be helpful in those kind of emergency kind of scenarios. So we encourage people to call us, and we can help with that.
And I know you've seen many success stories over the years, Chris, from youngsters that have been in there since they've been months old until they graduate from high school. And you can see their growth as an individual. It's got to be, very rewarding for you and your staff when you see that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of us have actually, the core group here that started with me at Bradley Street, most of them are still here. And so, you know, these kids are in their 30s now.
Yeah.
Some of them are almost approaching 40, so it's unreal. But, you know, and to see them out there and being successful and wanting to kind of contribute back, it's everything. That's what kind of keeps you going. And I always say, just kind of like with your own kids, you watch them growing up, sometimes you're like, you know, there were days I wasn't sure.
My mom still says that about me.
You were a handful when you were a teenager. But now, you know, they're doing well, and they're happy. You know, at the end of the day, some of these kids have come from some very challenging circumstances, and not happy children. They did not have unfortunately, a happy childhood like some of us were lucky enough to have. And to see them as adults and their children are happy, it's just, that's everything for us.
No doubt about it. Any fundraisers coming up, Chris?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that. We have Taste of New Hampshire, which this is probably the final year that it's completely virtual. Tasteofnewhampshire.com. You can get gift certificates. You get a $50 gift certificate to an array of restaurants for $40. and a $25 gift certificate for $20. The total proceeds of that go directly to the restaurant. We've already made our money through sponsorships and direct contributions from generous supporters. We did this last year as well, just kind of give a little bit of a boost to the restaurant industry, which is still reeling. I know we've all gone back and the places seem to be full, but they had a tough year. And this is your way to be able to continue to support the local restaurants who have supported the community all of these years. And it's a great deal. You know, if you can get a $50 gift certificate for $40, why not? So,
yeah, no, absolutely. No, I know. I took advantage of it last year, and why not? You're going to go out anyway.
You kind of hit it just right. TasteOfNewHampshire.com, and you can buy the tickets online right there. Yeah. A lot of the restaurants have QR codes too on little poster boards that are up and around in the community.
Yeah, so it's open right now.
It just opened this morning at 8 o'clock. Yeah,
that's perfect timing. What timing?
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
It's almost like this was coordinated somehow.
Really? And you know it wasn't. Because I don't plan that well. But it just a happenstance that it opened June 1st. And now, how long is it going to be open, Chris?
This week. Just for this week.
This week.
The cap, unlike last year, we had no idea what we were to expect, quite honestly. We ended up selling, I think it was like $120,000 of gift certificates, and that got a little rich. So we capped it with most of the restaurants. So I would encourage your listeners, don't wait. And you know, there are 40 something restaurants, and you all know the names because they're just all the classics around in town, and a few in Laconia. So get online and buy them up.
So it's Taste of NH or Taste of New Hampshire?
Of New Hampshire, all spelled out, .com.
Yep.
You can just Google it. It'll get you right to the page.
All right, Taste of New Hampshire, and you get $50 gift certificates for $40.
Yeah.
Yep. And can't beat that. So
I bought mine. You know, Father's Day is coming up, and I'm sure people's birthdays and whatnot, so...
And again, as you pointed out, that's an industry that has been struggling, of course, the restaurant industry. So anything you can do to give them a little boost would be beneficial to them and yourself as well with that that savings. And that's, you know, I mean, the event itself, I mean, over the years has been a must for many residents in this area, because it's always a tremendous event. But obviously, given the circumstances of last year and, you know, moving on to this year. But you are hoping to do a live one again in 2022?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. We feel, I hope so. Let's hope we can all, you know, as it is now with the arenas and whatnot opening up, I think we'll be able to pack the place again like we used to. So,
very good. And Chris, how can again people get more information on your services and also, you know, an opportunity perhaps for some people to become employed by the Boys and Girls Clubs of Central New Hampshire? What's the best way to go about it?
CentralNHClubs.org.
CentralNHClubs.org. Okay.
Yep.
Very good. And that is outstanding. And Chris, we thank you for all that you and your staff have done over the years for, you know, making the lives of so many youngsters in this area much better, giving them opportunities that they might not have had if not for the Boys and Girls Clubs of Central New Hampshire. And you guys have done just an amazing job over the years.
Thank you.
And what about the auction this year? You're going to have the auction, the Christmas auction?
Yeah, we definitely are going to have that. And I think you know, everyone uses the word hybrid now. It'll definitely be a mix of online. It's just so easy for people. And people are, again, it just amazes me that I've been around long enough where the technology is kind of caught up to what you'd always wanted to do, is sell these things online. But the people love the in-person nature of it and the back and forth that kind of goes on. So we'll definitely be live this year But we'll be selling a lot of the gift certificates and some of the other product online like we did last year, because people really did like it. It was so much easier, quite honestly, for our fundraising staff and volunteers too. And so, yeah, looking forward to that. That planning for that, that'll probably start up again in August.
Outstanding. Well, Chris Eamon, thanks so much, and thanks for joining us today here on Feltus and Kale. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Take
Have a
care.
Good morning.
You too.
Bye-bye. Chris Eamon, the CEO of the Boys and Girls Clubs of Central New Hampshire here on Feltus and Kale, and we are proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. 1039-1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Feltus and Kale, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And you know what? The ice cream trail that Amy Hall has talked about quite a bit on this program is now officially underway.
It's officially underway. It's 42 stops. And, Ken, if you want to get the scoop on the ice cream trail, how do you do it?
Well, I tell you what I did, honestly, is I was driving up from a visit with my daughter recently and stopped at the Hooksett rest area and picked up a couple of passports for the ice cream trail. They have all the information on the 42 stops along the way. I must confess I have not visited any of the stops as yet. But, you know, the weather was kind of not, you know, it's always a great day for ice cream. But
yeah,
the weather over the weekend, as most well know, was not conducive to really going outside and having an ice cream. So I have not hit any of the stops yet. But I think today is going to be my first stop. And there's actually one of the stops is within walking distance of where I live. So it's not that big an effort to get out and do it for that one. It's a great thing, and not only does it help local businesses in the state, but it helps New Hampshire dairy farmers who certainly could use it. And also, if you manage to visit all 42 of the locations on the trail, everybody that does gets a sweatshirt if you send the form back to a Granite State Dairy Promotion. And then there are two grand prizes, and we'll have the drawings for those right here on Feltus and Kale. So pick up those passports, as Amy calls them, and you can pick them up at any rest area in New Hampshire and also at the locations that are participating on the ice cream trail. So.
Yep, yeah, get out there and do it. It's a great way to see New Hampshire, too. And Ken and I have been practicing our ice cream eating skills in advance of this.
Sure. Yeah. We have all winter and spring long getting ready for this. Yep.
And it's a great opportunity to get around the state and support our local dairy producers, our local dairy farmers, and our local economy.
That is very, very true. And today, by the way, and we should have had Amy joining us today, because today is World Milk Day. Believe it or not, today is World Milk Day, and it's been observed annually on this date since 2001. Who knew?
20 years of World Milk Day.
World Milk Day.
Yep.
It's also National Olive Day, too, if you're into olives.
I like olives. Do you like olives, Ken?
Olives are good. Yeah. Olives are good, especially.
I like them on pizza.
Pizza, it's okay. I like them better in a Bloody Mary.
There you go.
To be honest. But it wouldn't be my top choice on a pizza, but about the only time I do have olives is when I have a Bloody Mary. That's it. I guess I'm a little crazy, but that's it. And it's also National Go Barefoot Day.
Mm.
Yeah, for those interested in that.
Yeah, well, our two daughters, are going to enjoy that day immensely.
Absolutely. Feltus and Kale with you, as we are every day. Monday through Friday, just after 11 o'clock. And I saw today, Dan, where Major League Baseball is being sued for $100 million for taking the All-Star game away from Atlanta in light of Georgia's voting laws. They did that a couple of months ago. A group called Job Creators Network It's a trade group founded by Home Depot co-founder Bernie Marcus, is planning to file a lawsuit in Manhattan federal court today, alleging that Major League Baseball's decision has injured Atlanta's small business community. Also to be named in the lawsuit is the MLB Players Association, which represents about 1,200 players, and which the Jobs Creators Network contends played a role in the decision to move the game out of Atlanta and to Denver. You know, that's a big chunk of change to be taken away from an area over what I thought anyway was a rather hasty decision by Major League Baseball. And, you know, reservations had been made. All kinds of things had been done, you know, well in advance of the All-Star game for what they thought was going to be in the Atlanta area, and now moved to Denver. So a $100 million lawsuit filed against Major League Baseball.
Well, it's hard to imagine that that it amounts to $100 million one game. But maybe it does. We'll have to see their lawsuit. But look, I think Stacey Abrams and others who had advocated for voting rights and advocated for the right to vote have also said, look, you know, we don't agree with these companies canceling things as a consequence. It affects the local Georgia economy and affects Georgians, and including those Georgians who were going to be disenfranchised by the new voting suppression law put through by the Republicans down in Georgia. So, look, I think that the overarching issue, though, Ken, which I think is really important, is, and you and I have talked about this, is I just don't get all of this voting suppression legislation and all this stuff that's going on. You know, here in New Hampshire, you got, for example, Senate Bill 3, which was a 16-page bill that I took to the state Senate floor when I wasn't serving the state Senate. I said, look, 16 pages of confusing regulations.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, come on now. Let's focus on what really – let's not create confusion and create all these hurdles and bureaucracy and red tape. Let's focus on the real problems out there. You know, we just had Chris Eman on, you know, like child care,
right,
helping working people, working families, property tax relief, the kind of stuff that, you know, health care that we need to focus on, especially right now. So I think the overarching issue is let's focus on the bread and butter issues.
Exactly. Don't overcomplicate this voting issue. Really?
Yeah.
I mean, it's worked for decades, for generations. For hundreds of years. So why make it overcomplicated? You're absolutely right. We have to take a break here. One more break, and as we head down the home stretch here, Feltus and Kale at 103.9 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. We are proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Heading down the home stretch, this edition of Feltus and Kale at 103.9 1450 WKXL, which is your home for Boston Celtics basketball and maybe home for Celtics basketball for just one more game this season if they don't win tonight against the Brooklyn Nets.
It's must win, and I'm not confident, Ken. Are you?
No, I'm not. Not in the slightest. Especially when you learn that Kemba Walker is going to be out again for this Game 5 tonight in Brooklyn. And also Robert Williams III will not be able to play either. And you've already had Jaylen Brown out for the entire playoff. So, I'm not very confident. And it was an eventful weekend, let's say, at the TD Garden when the Nets came to town with the highly controversial Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think about that at the end there?
I think his stomping or rubbing his foot on the leprechaun at midcourt was ridiculous. Didn't need to be done. I don't agree, you know, with people throwing things at him or anybody else either. So both sides are to blame, really. But Kyrie kind of sparked it with some of his remarks. But to kind of stomp on the leprechaun, I don't know. It just didn't have to be done. Classless act, I think. by Kyrie.
Well, maybe he just thought that he needed to rub the leprechaun for good luck.
Yeah, maybe that's what it was. Yeah, okay. All right. You can draw your own conclusions. But we're going to have to draw to a close for this edition of Feldis and Kale. Thanks for joining us. 1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire Dairy Farmers.